In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I interviewed teacher turned entrepreneur Ellen Reynolds Keane. Ellen is passionate about education, health and well-being, and podcasts, and we had so much to talk about. This episode will be split into two parts, so you'll be able to hear the rest of our conversation in episode 40 coming out this Wednesday. In part one, we talk about what Ellen has learnt about the Smart City concept and why she thinks it's important, as well as how she is herself embracing the Smart City concept from a non-built environment planning or engineering background, coming at it from a different angle. So as always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with Smart City experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Good morning, Ellen. How are you today?
I'm well, Zoe. How are you?
I am very well. Let's just jump straight into this. And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you are passionate about?
So my background is in education. I was a high school teacher for the better part of my 20s. And I, during that time and before I even became a teacher while I was at university, I had a series of health challenges, including thyroid cancer while I was at uni. And so that also means that I'm very, very passionate about health and well-being. I think I learned some lessons pretty young about the value of health and how it's, you can't purchase health later in life. You need to really make sure that you're looking after it all the way through. And so, that's what I am passionate about. And these days I split my time. I'm no longer in the school classroom. I'm in the classroom of life. I split my time between my self-care for teachers business, which is for teacher well-being, basically. I'm very passionate about preventing teacher burnout and keen to improve the health and well-being of, all of our schools, all of the school staff and students and parents and school communities, and by extension, I think, the rest of society. And I also am part of the gig economy. My other hat that I wear is as a freelancer. I freelance in various areas of digital content. I edit podcasts, such as the Smart City Podcast. And I also do some educational consulting for online courses, obviously with my background in education and curriculum design. And yeah, I really, really enjoy the flexibility of, working from home, following the things that I'm passionate about, which, is education, health and well-being, and podcasts, basically.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about smart cities and what sparked your interest in smart cities.
Well, funnily enough, it was this podcast. I actually didn't know very much about smart cities before I started working for the Smart City Podcast, but I have really, really enjoyed it a lot more than I expected, actually. I've learned a lot more, and it's a lot more accessible than I thought. It seemed a very technical concept to me before I started listening to this podcast and talking to you about it. But I now obviously realize that it's not all about the connected and automated vehicles and the IoT, which I now know what that means. And I think it's actually much more of an accessible and important concept than I realized. So this podcast is what sparked my interest.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what is a smart city to you?
Well, I can only go really by what I've learned from all your previous guests. Obviously, a really common theme that I've picked up throughout the episodes is that it's not about the tech. It's not tech for tech's sake. It's really about making the city livable using tech and data and all the other, smart options. But really it's about human beings. It's about society and community and making life better. And I think that's obviously something that's a theme that runs through my life. It's not really been about the tech as the way to achieve it in my life and in the life of the people that I work with, but it's something that really appeals to me. So I think that human-centered, optimizing human life approach is something that I really like.
Yeah, cool. So that kind of leads on to the next question, which is why do you think the smart city concept is so important?
I think it's important because we as human beings are We are very, very good at, you know, following projects and making things better, but we're not always very good at doing that in a way that's actually good for everybody. Especially, you know, in the 20th century, there's lots of examples of, you know, perhaps making technology better but ruining the environment, or making the economy better but, you know, exploiting people. And I think the smart city concept is, the way I view it, I think it's important because hopefully it's the way that we as humans can kind of go to the next level and maybe improve the lives of, you know, the top 1% and also the rest of the world, and not ruin the environment in the process, and not, you know, spend all our lives chained to a desk in the process, and actually hopefully improve the lives of all the creatures on the planet and the planet as well.
Yeah, definitely. So I know you are embracing the smart city concept, even if you don't know it. So let's talk about some of the, well, you do know it now, of course. Let's talk about some of the projects and things that you're currently working on.
Yeah. So like I said, I run Self Care for Teachers, which is an online wellbeing hub for school teachers, predominantly based in Australia. And I'm a transformational life coach, focusing on the areas of wellbeing in that's who I work with, is teachers. And so that's probably my primary project, I suppose. And I run the Teacher Wellbeing Podcast through Self Care for Teachers as well. And so some of the projects that I'm working on there, for example, is to actually use data to get a better understanding of what teachers need. So I'm currently, just at the moment, in the month of June 2018, running a survey of Australian school teachers to find out how their health and well-being is going, and actually, you know, collect some data. So I guess that's one way that I'm maybe applying some smart city concepts. Data is a very it's absolutely a part of education, although getting stuck in data for data's sake is a big concern for a lot of teachers. And so I think I'm very focused. Again, it's like that idea of it's not tech for tech's sake, it's tech for a purpose, tech that can, you know, make human lives better. And I think data has got to be the same thing. It can't be data for data's sake. And so Self-Care for Teachers is probably my main project. I also, in my own personal life, I try and use, I try and run mini experiments all the time to improve my health and well-being. And that pretty much always involves some kind of data, whether it's, you know, especially when I was teaching, I actually track the hours that I work per week, to try and not down to huge amounts of detail. Like I spend 20 minutes on this project and, you know, 15 minutes talking to a coworker, and then 12 minutes on something else. Like I don't do that, but just tracking the number of hours that I work per week, because I'm very aware that, you know, anything, they tend to say anything over 38 hours a week for women tends to see a decline in health and well-being. And of course there's a lot of people in the world who work far more hours than that. But so being aware of that and kind of doing the life hacking where I try and improve my, you know, health and well-being through, you know, various apps and things that I track of my life. And then the other projects that I'm working on are generally other people's projects where I'm involved in, you know, their podcasts or their various digital, worlds that they're creating with the wonder and magic of the internet. So there's the Smart City podcast. I'm involved in quite a number of others that I can't necessarily name, but generally really projects that are people wanting to make a difference in the world, and the way they're doing that is through, you know, digital content, information, education, connecting people online, creating communities of people online. They might be spread out all over the world. They're coming together for a common goal and a common focus that, you know, in the case of the Smart City podcast, it's like people who are interested in smart cities, but perhaps from all corners of the globe, and all, you know, not everybody is an engineer like you, Zoe, and not everybody is a town planner or somebody with urban informatics background. But there's loads of different ideas that you know, can contribute and I really enjoy being a part of those projects, and I'm actually, now that I've kind of adjusted to it, I quite enjoy the gig economy and the freedom that being a freelancer has given me, the freedom to run my day and look after my health and well-being in a way that works for me instead of against me, which is, and against my individual needs, which is what I found working for the government when I was working for state schools. There's not always a lot of flexibility, and quite rightly, we've got to run the classroom, so fair enough. But I really enjoy being a freelancer in that regard. I mean, it's pros and cons, but that's one of probably the biggest project for me in the last 18 months has been learning how to operate in the gig economy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's such an important part of the smart city concept. And I think maybe, I know Andrew spoke about it on Friday's episode, last Friday's episode. And I think people that are living the smart city concept are the people that I want to, kind of talk to. And I think it's so important that we have, we have the engineers, we have the town planners, but we have the artists, we have the baristas, we have all these people, because we're all fitting into the Smart City exactly. podcast. We have, the gig economy. We're both millennials. But again, like Andrew was talking about in the last one, we've got this other wave of, the next wave of the Gen Zs coming through. And then we've also got, people that aren't millennials above us, and it has to work for everybody. And I think the gig economy, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be the gig economy, but I think even the government can learn from the gig economy and vice versa, because we can kind of use that, task approach rather than a you work these hours approach. And I think that's really important. And that's the only kind of way the smart city is going to move forward, because if everyone has to still drive to a desk, then we're not going to solve traffic congestion. We're not going to solve, well-being. Like, people don't enjoy sitting in vehicle. Well, I'm speaking for myself. I don't mind sitting in a vehicle, but I don't like driving. Think about all the things that I could be doing. But yeah, so definitely I'm excited that you're living the smart city concept.
Yeah. And I think really the world of business and freelancing is so vastly different to anything I was prepared for by my education degree. And again, fair enough, because I was prepared to go into a classroom and work for a school, whether or not it was an independent school or the Catholic system or the state system, which is where I spent my whole career. But it did prepare me for being independent, and I think teachers have to be able to work autonomously. There's, loads and loads of tasks that teachers have to do that are just set to a deadline. And there's, sure, you have to be in the classroom between the hours of 9 and 3. But after that, at what time of the day you complete your report cards, that's up to you, really. Whether you want to do them before school or you want to do them after school, you want to do it on Sunday afternoon. Like, that's, there's a bit of flexibility there. So in that sense, I was very well prepared for working towards a deadline, within my own timetable and kind of setting that up in a way that works for me. But I definitely wasn't prepared for what I have now realized are just common things about business, like, quoting somebody and, then, for example, realizing that, oh my goodness, I told them, it's going to be this amount of money because I think it's going to take 10 hours work, and it's actually going to take me 23 hours to complete that. And now my hourly rate is like $6. So that's been a really, really big learning curve. And of course, just the absolute change in the financial arrangement of no longer am I getting, one salary payment every fortnight into my account of the same amount from the same person, and it just comes automatically. It's all on me. If I don't send the invoice, I don't get paid. That's been a really, really new thing. But it's also been, I'm quite suited to that. So it's been a learning curve, but I think every career change and every job change is. But I also think it wouldn't necessarily be worth it if the drawbacks for me from the traditional working system weren't so dramatic on my health. I think it's only because there's been such a significant difference for me and my personal, health circumstances in being able to run my life in a way that, supports my health, if working for somebody else hadn't been so hard on my health, working for a system that has fairly rigid guidelines, if that hadn't been so hard on my health, then I'm not certain that the benefits of working for myself would necessarily outweigh the frustrations in, you know, so it's not for everybody, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I agree. And I think that's so true and so relevant to the smart city concept. Not everybody is going to, I mean, everybody could work for themselves, but it wouldn't necessarily work very well because I think of people even, you know, people that I know very well that are great workers in there and they love it. They love working for somebody else. They get stuff done and then they, you know, they go home and they do the things that they want to do and that kind of thing. I totally get that. And I think we'll have so many, there'll be so many different options and we need that in the smart city because people work very differently.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's no one size fits all. And I think the other thing, having a really strong insight into our education system, I think we are so good these days, you know, especially in the last 20 to 30 years, we've been really good at identifying that children are not all the same. Individual children have individual needs and we need to cater to that in our classrooms. You know, the teachers are differentiating. That's the term that is used about meeting the individual needs of students in classrooms. And then we get out into the world of work. And I think this is really why there's maybe a really strong, whether it is a millennial, you know, millennial thing, or whether it's, you know, it's actually just that there's been a big change in education. There's been lots of changes in education, but there's definitely been a change in education. The education that you and I had, Zoe, when we went through, it was understood that not every student sitting in that classroom was going to be learning in exactly the same way or at exactly the same rate. And so we were given this really, you know, to the best of our various teachers' abilities, a bit of a tailored approach. And then we get out into the workforce and it's still that industrialized model of conformity. Everybody must do the same thing, even if in fact it's inefficient for everybody to do the same thing. And it's wasting time and money and energy for everybody to be doing the same thing because everybody doesn't work in the same way. So I 100% agree that some of the people that I know, and I think I'm a good employee as well. This is actually the thing. I'm a good employee. I just perhaps working for the education system as it currently stands just wasn't good for my health. I'm a good employee. I think I'm a pretty good self-employed person as well. Now it's been an adjustment, of course, but also I'm not really committed to saying I'm going to be doing what I'm doing now for the rest of my life either. You know, there are different seasons in life. What works for me now may not work for me in 5 years' time. It might not work for me next month. I don't know. And what works for the person sitting next to you in your office cubicle, or, you know, the person in the car next to you in your commute on the way to your various separate office cubicles is not necessarily going to be the same thing. And the more we can understand and embrace that, and it's hard because it does require, it is a little bit of extra work. It's a lot of extra work for teachers to identify the various needs of the students in their class and then tailor the education that they're delivering to them. And obviously there's a limit to how much that is possible in a group of, you know, 25 all in one room. And the same is going to be true in a workplace. You're going to have a team of however many, you know, there might be 100 staff members in this company. There's going to be times and where everybody is just going to have to do the same thing. Everybody just has to be at the office today because that's the way we're doing it today. But maybe tomorrow you can be working from home and, you know, each individual person will have some level of flexibility. And I really look forward to when that is just kind of standard and, yeah, the norm.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it's about working in a high trust, high respect environment because an employee needs to be able to trust their employees, and that's not always the case. It's not all about the employee. Like, there's work that needs to be done. Obviously, the person wouldn't be in business, but it's about creating that high trust, high respect environment. And I think it does take a bit longer because it's not the norm yet. But when it becomes the norm, it will still be effort. Like, it won't just work because some people won't work the way you need them to work in that circumstance, and that's okay because they move on to the next one or they work for themselves or whatever. But, yeah, no, definitely. Let's talk about Australia a little bit and, like, how do you think Australia is embracing the smart city concept?
Mm. That's a good question. I don't really know the answer because I don't think I know enough yet about smart cities and also about industries other than education, really. But I do get the sense, certainly from listening to the podcast, that there are a whole lot of people in Australia who actually are already doing this, whether or not the, you know, and the government keeps using the word innovation all the time. So, I mean, we must be at least starting to be aware of it. Whether or not I get the sense that Europe is a lot further down the line, particularly like with, you know, you and Andrew mentioned the GDPR, General Data Protection Regulation that's just coming in Europe. And I think we're a long way behind Europe in probably some of that thinking, that future-based thinking. But not only that, I think probably European citizens are much further down that awareness point that, you know, for example, in the previous episode you were talking about citizens, consumers having control of their own data. I don't really think Australians are there yet with that conversation at all. So I think there's a level definitely of maybe our government and our industry isn't driving it, but I also think that Australian citizens are a bit oblivious to the smart city concept. So that's got to be a problem to us being leaders in the space because everyday Aussies have no idea.
and it's so true. And I think that that's a problem or it's a challenge because part of the smart city concept needs to be education about the smart city concept. So no, it's really interesting. I think in a few of the previous episodes, I can't recall which ones exactly, but we talked about how smart citizens need to know that they're smart citizens. Otherwise, what are we doing?
Exactly. And I consider myself to be a reasonably small S smart citizen, you know, these days, you know, since I've been involved in the Smart City podcast, I think I'm maybe becoming a capital S smart citizen. Before I was involved in this project, I considered myself reasonably aware and I still didn't really understand it. I mean, I've heard the term and in my mind it was the Jetsons.
Yeah, definitely. No, there's a few little projects that I'm planning, which is all about just smart city education. So it's not about tech at all. I mean, this is what this podcast is about as well, the education piece. So I think you being here, coming from the education background, is really important as well.
Well, and also because certainly since being involved in or being self-employed and you know, going to networking events and learning a bit more about business and the startup space, I see there's conversations around teaching entrepreneurship to our students in our classrooms and teaching coding and teaching modern technology. And, you know, me with the education background thinks, no way are we there yet. Like we can't even fairly fund all our public state schools, like you've got Buckley's of getting aging teachers, burning out teachers to teach something like coding, which they don't know themselves. How can they teach that to students? And entrepreneurship, which is a whole new world from the world that most educators live in. Like I think there's a long way to go for us to be creating those smart citizens. And if when, you know, exactly like Andrew was talking about, the looking to the future and saying, well, what are we going to need to get there? I mean, if we don't do it intentionally, you know, the next generation is going to grow up and they already know more about the internet than their iPads, you know, than their mums and their dads. There's already loads and loads of problems with, you know, young children accessing things on the internet that their parents don't even know how to access, and their six-year-olds accidentally stumbling on porn. You know, there's loads of challenges to do with the kind of the new world that we do live in that I think the rest of society, you know, the everyday person hasn't caught up with yet. The education piece of the adults, let alone of the kids who are going to be tomorrow's leaders, is so important.
Yeah, definitely. I think like Roxanne Griffith talked about her program that she, you know, it's quite specific, but it's all about that. It's about, you know, educating veterans now to build a better future tomorrow. And I think Colin spoke about that quite as well, about not accidentally, you know, creating this awful society for us all.
Yeah, and I think we can't be complacent because I think we've already been complacent, particularly with the advent of, you know, smart devices with our children. We can't be complacent about the rest of the changes that technology is going to bring to society, because we're going to end up with similar issues that we have today with the you know, kids and being addicted to devices by the time they're 10, you know. We have to be intentional about creating the future that we want. Otherwise, that kind of science fiction dystopian future that we've all been all been taught to fear by all our entertainment is more likely to happen. Whereas we can avoid it if we intention. In the same way with, you know, preventable health problems. Like if we don't pay any attention to our health and we just eat McDonald's all the time and never exercise and, you know, we're going to probably get heart disease. Like, you know, but we can avoid getting heart disease. It's not a guarantee if we look after ourselves, if we intentionally avoid that and by doing the things that we know prevent that. So I think it's the same thing, same kind of idea.
I agree. And I think it's best to be involved in this space, even if it's a little bit scary, because then we can shape it. Whereas if we aren't involved, then it's going to happen without us. Stay tuned for the rest of our conversation in the next episode, where we discuss life design in smart cities, as well as the important emerging trends that we aren't talking about.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Smart City Pod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.